Welcome to episode 72 of Conversation Street, the only podcast dedicated to the British soap institution Coronation Street. I'm Michael.
And I'm Gemma.
And this week we'll be discussing the episodes broadcast in the UK between the 8th and the 13th of December 2013. And I think this is possibly the latest we've ever recorded an episode, because it is now Saturday afternoon. So
it's your fault.
Yeah, I had my school Christmas do last night. So, yeah, got back at, like, when was it? 11:30 or something? Then we watched Corrie. So we didn't finish watching Corrie until about 1 in the morning. And then...
I rebelled. I was too tired.
Yeah. So, and then you didn't want to get up this morning either.
No, I didn't.
In fact, we're still doing this in bed. This is our second ever podcast recording in bed.
It's just saucy.
One of those lazy days. What's been happening in Coronation Street history?
Can I just say about the last week?
Yeah.
Two disappointing things.
What?
Number one, no reference at all to the fact that it was Friday the 13th.
What, in Coronation Street?
Yeah.
No. It was unlucky for Julie, though.
Secondly, no Christmas stuff yet.
What do you mean? They got Christmas cards and
Nobody's
stuff everywhere.
Talking about Christmas. I want a solid month of Christmas, 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 Christmas.
Well, I wonder whether this concert that they're going to have on the Bistro next week is going to kind of kick off Christmas.
Festivities.
Yeah, but you're right, nobody has properly mentioned it. They're just getting these cards and putting them up.
Usually they say stuff like, oh, I can't believe it's nearly Christmas. Oh,
he's going to die this year.
Yeah, wonder what catastrophe will happen.
Yeah, maybe if they think they don't mention it, they'll get by.
Maybe just be a nice, every so normal... often they give each other like a look like, don't say anything.
Don't say it's Christmas, some tragedies happen.
Anyway,
let's
talk about Corrie history.
Okay, speaking of tragedies at this time of year, 30 years ago was when Len Fairclough
never
died.
Never stood a chance. Yeah.
Gemma always says never stood a chance when we say Len Fairclough because...
Because of a hilarious, but probably banned next year, song by Harry Hill about Ken Barlow.
Yeah.
Sung by Ken Barlow himself.
And Harry Hill.
Yeah, it's fantastic. If you never heard it, look it up. You can download it on iTunes.
Yeah, it's called Ken, and it's by Harry Hill. And it's got a line about Len Fairclough.
Never stood a chance. And I can't now hear that name without saying...
Especially if we're talking about his death. Well, and he hadn't been in the programme for a while before either. And he died in a car crash on the way back from seeing his mistress. Naughty man.
No, it's terrible.
25 years ago since Dawn Acton took on the role of Tracy
Blimey.
Barlow.
Wow, do you think she should really have some kind of... present?
Why?
What do you mean, 25 years since?
Dawn Acton, she's not...
Oh!
Not Kate Ford.
Oh, yeah.
She's not been doing it that
people,
long.
Aren't they?
Tracy Barlow isn't played by many people.
There you go.
I don't know what Dawn is doing at the moment. 15 years ago since the last appearance of Tony Horrocks, and 5 years since the Windass family moved into the street. I think we saw their first appearance a month or so ago, and 5 years. But yeah, they've been residents on the street for quite a long time, really, isn't it? Usually,
well,
like,
considering you think that she's new, yes.
Yeah, usually like that house is like revolving doors, the number of families that go in and out of it. Yeah, well, that's how I always think of it.
That's because you're a true fan, I'm just a noob.
Yeah, we've had a birthday this week on the cast as well. 40th birthday, I hope she doesn't mind us mentioning it, to Katie Kavanagh. So happy birthday to her as well.
Julie, so lovely.
Yeah.
40.
She doesn't look it.
She does to me. Well, no, only because I always categorise people, like, if you're older than me or younger than me, and that's the only thing I ever think about. And if you're older than me, I don't know if you're 50, 100, does it make any difference?
Yeah.
You just go into that category in my head.
Old.
Older, younger.
It's not too old to have a baby, though. Well, not too old to adopt, anyway.
Well, no, because as I was telling my mum the other day, there are no issues related to having a child up to the age of 40, so unfortunately, she better start.
Could you, Katie Kavanagh did have an actual baby this
she
year.
She had an actual baby.
So
she's very well aware of this, obviously.
Yeah, get in there while you can.
I don't think that the risks... Well, I don't know. I think people over-exaggerate it, don't they?
I don't know. I don't know anything about
babies. We're not talking about fertility anyway. We don't know anything about that.
No, we're talking about Coronation Street. So let's get on with Street Talk. Oh, right, so we really enjoyed Coronation Street last week with all the wedding stuff. I've not been that much of a fan this week.
Oh, we shouldn't do your podcast then.
It's been okay, but I've missed Roy and Hayley terribly this week. I don't know what they've been up to.
I haven't. I thought it was quite good because I'm bored of their storyline now. I've said this before.
I know. That wasn't, yeah. Well, we have had lots of Platts, of course. Platt out. He's been in, he's been out, he's been shaking it all about. So he is the last thing that we knew of David was that he was just about to turn himself into the police yesterday. So we'll talk about that first.
Oh, yeah.
Also on his way out, but not quite, is Brian. Pack him off. Is now also packing his bags from Julie's. It looks like.
Doesn't it? I think so.
Yeah. Dev has still been on his fitness endeavour with, and we got a new character. Cal.
Yay, I like it when we get a new character.
We haven't had many new characters this year, so we've got Cal, so we'll talk a bit more about Cal when we get there. New storyline alert, Dennis has got his own storyline again. They're fairly good, I think, now at giving Dennis maybe like 2 or 3 fortnight-long storylines in a year.
Yeah.
I'm happy enough with that, I think.
He can tackle him as well. He always gives it good gusto, doesn't he?
He does. I enjoy watching Dennis. I don't think I'm enjoying this as much as the lollipop storyline last year. But, yeah, nice to have him.
I don't like it because I'm not quite sure where it's going.
No, if it's just going to end in a concert, then...
Boring.
Yeah. Or maybe it's going to have a sordid affair between him and Gloria. That's what Rita thinks is going to happen anyway.
That'd be quite funny.
And... we've got a few things to say about Sean and Todd, which is kind of, I guess, separate from the Julie and Brian storyline, which Todd's also been involved in. Basically, Sean is still lending as much money as he possibly can to Todd. So as a storyline about lending and money, we're calling this Sean Broker. Sounds like Pawn Broker.
I'm glad you told everyone that.
Good. Right. What should we say? Let's start with Platt out. So the last thing that we saw on Friday last week, was it? That Audrey has decided that David can work for her in the salon.
She wanted to keep it a secret to start with, didn't she? But she this week she's decided on Sunday that she's going to have to tell everyone.
Yeah.
That this she's decided to do this.
Yeah, obviously Kylie and Nick aren't too thrilled about it. Nick's just been grumpy face all week this week, hasn't he?
Yeah. Gail just wants everything back to normal again, but she thinks it's too quick of a move to have him working.
Yeah.
Working there.
Well, he's desperately trying to build these bridges back with his family, and he brings a load of money to Gail on Sunday as well, doesn't he, to pay for Lily and
the mortgage and everything. Yeah, it's still his house. And he wants to keep up with that.
Yeah.
And Nick is so enraged by this new job that David's got that he barges into the salon and demands a haircut.
That's pretty sinister.
It's good, isn't
it? Scary Nick.
I told you, this new Nick is the best character on the street now.
I don't know about a haircut, but he does need a bit of a shave. He still had quite short hair when he went in there, but he was like, give me a haircut.
He's like, he knows exactly what I want.
Yeah.
And Dave's like, no, I don't think so. And Nick's like, get off my street. Think where you'd be if everyone knew the whole truth.
Yeah. When we say David in a bit, he spots Kylie, but they kind of keep their distance from each other. Because a lot of the rest of it, the week between them two, is like, oh, they kind of want to get back together, but they kind of don't. And
it's a kind of like, will they, won't they have, really, yeah,
knowing
it?
Glances there. But anyway... Kylie later finds this money that David's brought around, but she's like, no, we don't need money, we don't need David, we don't need money.
Well, wasn't she asking the other week for money, or saying that she was struggling, or I can't remember.
She is struggling, but she's not desperate enough to go back to her...
Where's she getting money from?
...near murderous husband. I don't know, has she got...
She's not renting, if she gets benefits, she probably has to pay this stupid bedroom tax as well, didn't she? Because she's got 2 bedrooms in there.
I don't know.
She can't be funding it all from Gail.
No.
Because Gail supposedly has this debt that nobody's mentioned from old Loverboy.
Yeah, I think that's all been cleared up.
What, from working in the bistro cleaning toilets?
Yeah.
Well, I need to get myself a job doing that then, don't I?
Well, Kylie goes and finds David at the salon later and they ask Audrey to leave. So they have a bit of a heart-to-heart discussion, which almost involves... a bit of reconciliation, because he reveals to her that he nearly chucked himself off the cliff when they were away in wherever it was on holiday, and that kind of shocks her into realizing that he actually has feelings too, and he's not just evil. So they have a bit of a holdy hands moment.
Well, she also says, I wish I'd never slept with Nicky, but I thought you were over. I thought we were over, and you were really horrible. Because in all of this, everyone's blaming David for everything, because he hurt Nick. But really, it was Kylie that drove him to it. But really, she was driven to it by David in the first place. So it is all of David's making, really, isn't it? She said she regrets how much it hurt him to sleep with Nick, and she wished she'd never done it.
Yeah, so it almost looks like they're going to get back together again, until he says, oh, I'm sure that Nick will come round if I keep working on him. And that wasn't the best turn of phrase to use, because she's like, what, working on him? Oh, like, you've been working on me? I was quite surprised how much she kind of leapt down his throat. It was almost like she suddenly came to her senses and remembered that she didn't want to get back to him. And
it's like she was being hypnotised and suddenly she broke out of it or something, because I think that's the thing she doesn't like about him, isn't it? That he's sneaky and manipulative.
Yeah.
And so when she realised that, yeah, that's what he's doing again, she just says she hates him, and yeah, they only have hate left.
He wasn't being sneaky or manipulative, though, I don't think. I think he was just generally trying to get back with his family.
Well, I don't know. Of course he is manipulating... In a certain way, but he has to. He can't just leave it to time, can he? Because he's got nowhere to live.
Yeah,
nowhere.
when he said, oh, I just need to keep working on Nick, it wasn't like, I'm going to try and trick him into forgiving me, I don't think. It was like, I'm just going to keep trying to apologise until he does forgive me, is how I kind of took
it.
But anyway, he doesn't need to work too hard on Gail, because by the end of that episode, she's kind of realizing that she needs to have David back.
Yeah, she wants her family back together.
Has she spoken to Audrey about this? Because Audrey's the main one.
They haven't
so
really
far.
Spoken. I don't think there hasn't really been much talk between the two. But Kylie says to Gail, look, I'm scared my family's slipping away, because the thing is about Kylie is that she doesn't have a family anymore since
Becky's left,
so she's left with her kids, who are also David's kids. And she's kind of got this new adoptive family, and she's hoping that they'll rally around her and protect her from David. And Gail's saying, oh, really, Dan, you're not on your own. And then Kylie says, oh, I still love David. And Gail gets quite excited and said, oh, that's brilliant. And there's still hope. And Kylie's like, no, it's not good, because we're no good for each other, and I want to be left alone. Because she realises that they're both so destructive. She knows it's not just him, that she hurts him as well.
Yeah.
And she thinks it's just no good.
Yeah, there was a bit of her blaming herself, definitely, at last. She's realising that she is at fault a bit. So on Wednesday's episode, Max is feeling poorly. Gail's looking after him. That's when David comes around and he hears that, I could make myself useful here. So he offers to go and get some of that pink stuff, sugar-free, from the chemist. So obviously not sponsored by Calpol this week.
Was it always sugar-free? I feel sorry for kids these days. They've got to have sugar-free stuff.
The best bit about being ill, having sugary medicine.
Do you love that bit where you drink it, it's all crunchy?
Yeah.
Brilliant. You should get some Calpol. I think that's how drug problems start.
Max doesn't want him to leave, does he?
When he gets back,
he does his puppy dog eyes and like, oh, can you play with me, David?
But Nick comes in, all grumpy, and makes David get out. And Gail's like, you can't stop him from seeing his daughter. Oh, I'm stuck in the middle.
And that's when Nick is like evil to her. And he was like some kind of EastEnders gangster, I thought. Because he was like, oh, Mum, you got to choose him or me. And if you don't support me, I'm off. I'm out of here.
Yeah, brilliant. Keep going, Nick.
Yeah. It's all part of the brain damage, I guess, that he can't
see it clearly. I don't mind. It's brilliant. So Nick then issues another ultimatum to David and says, look, go and turn yourself into the cops or disappear, because you've done something wrong and you're not going to get away with it.
Yeah. Gail then invites David round the house by text, and that was a bit of a double. That was a bit of a bluff, really, wasn't it?
He thinks he's going round to be forgiven.
Yeah, and she does act all nice to him at first, because she's kind of genuinely saying what she's feeling about how she still loves him, and she wishes the family was back together. But in the end, she drops the bombshell, saying that it's going to be better for everyone if you move away.
Even if it breaks her heart to say.
Yeah.
He's he wants her to change her mind, but no.
No.
He leaves with not tears in his eyes.
Yeah, not before hugging Max, as Max is like, oh, David, I want to hug. Jack P. Sherwood is acting his little socks off all the way through this, and when he was having that hug with Max, and he was like, obviously realising this could be the last time that he sees him, because probably at that point he was already kind of thinking about turning himself into the police again.
I think he thinks it's a last-ditch attempt to... Oh, I'll talk about that when we get to it.
Okay. So, on to Friday, then. Audrey's not impressed by Gail getting rid of David, because it's like Gail is saying, no, you got a sack, David. He can't work for you anymore. This is not really any of Gail's concern.
Yeah, well, he basically has been run out of the street, doesn't he? Because David goes to the salon and says, I'm worried that my kids are going to grow up thinking that I've abandoned them when I haven't, and... thanks for all the support. I'll see you later then.
I never even considered that, really, but I wonder whether Max would, because how long's Max known David now? 2 or 3 years? And he's of the right age where I think he knows enough about what's going on that he wouldn't think that David had abandoned them.
No, don't. Just think about what Kylie would tell them.
But if Kylie had said that, I'm sure that Gail would have been poking her head around the corner.
Yeah, but don't you think that she would have said, keep your nose out? That's what I would say.
Yeah,
not that
Gail,
I would ever
not
do
that.
Gail's
very good at keeping her nose out of things. But definitely Lily would grow up with no idea about.
It's sad, isn't it, to think that actually happens in real life?
I know. Well, he gives Audrey a big hug in the salon. I thought that was quite nice as well. I was like, oh, thank you for all your support, because she's really been the only one looking out for him.
Sounds like the sort of thing you say when someone gives you like a cheque for 50 quid for a charity, isn't it?
I'd forgotten when we watched this yesterday that all this suggestion of going to turn yourself into the police had even been brought up. So it never really occurred to me that he was kind of saying his last goodbyes to people. And it was the same when he saw David in the he saw Kylie in the Rovers later as well, saying, oh, because she says, oh, pack your things, and he's like, oh, I don't need to pack where I'm going, they're better off without me. I thought it sounded like he was going to go and sign up to the army or something.
Yeah, I did. Yeah, that's what I thought.
He's like going to go and find Gary and say, so what's, how'd you get in?
So that PTSD ain't so bad, is it? You're over it now, right?
It's probably, do you think he'd get into the army?
Yeah.
He's a bit little, isn't he? Is there a minimum height requirement to join the army?
I don't know.
Or he could just be like the cannon fodder at the front. He's proven himself to be quite good with a baseball bat.
That's true.
he's put that on his CV. And...
has he still got a record, though? Because they don't think they take you, do they?
Oh, I don't know. I don't know, actually. Leanne and Nick are arguing over David later as well, because Leanne has even realised that Nick's being a bit too harsh and accuses him of guilt-tripping Gail. So I wonder how much, if David tried, he'd have been able to work Leanne round to kind of fight on his corner.
You might have been able to.
Because she's certainly getting quite weary of looking after Nick already.
Yeah, I think she thinks that if David helped out a bit, or Nick's still quite bitter. If he just forgave David, I think he might be able to move forward.
Yeah, I'm not sure whether Leanne particularly cares about whether David and Kylie get back together.
No.
Apart from, like, general, like, wouldn't it be nice? But she just wants this to be one less thing that Nick's stressing out about. She wants them to make up for Nick's sake.
No good for him, really.
No. So Kylie, by this point, has kind of realised that her last meeting with David at the Rovers was a bit odd, and they've all come to the conclusion that he might have gone to the police station, because Nick says that's what he suggested to him yesterday. Nick's like, well, it's the best place for him. But by this point, Gail is worried, Kylie's worried, was Audrey there? So there's been this huge turnaround, and now it seems like Nick is the bad guy.
Yeah, yeah. So then we see the police station, and David's there saying, I'm here to report a crime.
Yeah, and I'm pretty sure they are using the same desk sergeant at the police station. I think I do recognise him. He's not quite as got a memorable look as our registrar lady.
No, that's true. Now, can we talk about Dave's intentions here?
Yeah.
Because, obviously, I'm here to report a crime is quite a dramatic thing to say. But perhaps a more accurate and more dramatic thing to have said in this situation was, I'm here to turn myself in.
Yeah.
So David ends up sitting at the police station for the entire next episode, right?
Yeah,
I don't know. Because he said, the policeman's like, you're in the queue, all these people have also got to report crimes, you just have to wait your turn. So David obviously is not fully committed to turning himself in. So I think this was just a ruse.
Do you really?
Yeah, I do. Because you, unless it's lazy script writing, because you would never, if you were going to
confess
that you tried to kill your brother, you wouldn't say, I'm here to report a crime, would you? You'd say, I need to talk to someone immediately. I'm here to turn myself in because...
Yeah. I wonder how especially much thought he would have put into it, because you're right. But would he have expected to have had to have waited?
No, though? But if you've been waiting there, right, and then they say, oh no, all these people have got report crimes as well, wouldn't you be like, yeah, but I'm the one that committed the crime. You would have said something in the amount of time that you'd been there. And he even speaks to the sergeant and says, I've been here for ages.
I think part of him wants, because he does feel sorry for everything, I think. And I think he thinks that it's probably the best thing to do, but he's just a bit scared of it, like you would be.
I'm on team Kylie here with saying how manipulative David is. I think even if he doesn't realise it, that is exactly what he's doing.
Well, luckily he doesn't need to turn himself in the end, because Nick's there and he's...
Gail tells Nick she'll never forgive him if David goes to prison.
Yeah.
And everyone, Gail and Audrey, are really upset. Kylie thinks it's a bluff. So Nick goes to the police station and says, oh, like you wanted, I've come here to stop you. But he's not really quite sure whether he wants to drag him out or not, so he sits down with him, doesn't he? And they both have a little conversation.
With David maybe not intending to confess, do you think that he was hoping that somebody would come and realise he was there?
Yeah.
And if they hadn't, that was he was giving his family one last chance to come and forgive him, I guess, or rescue him or something.
Yeah.
I wonder if he was expecting it to be Nick, the one that actually came, and not Gail there.
I don't think it would have worked if it had been anyone else but Nick, though.
Why not?
Because he's doing it because Nick told him to. And if someone else comes and says, oh, don't do it, that doesn't take away Nick's desire for him to turn himself in. So he had to be rescued by Nick. He had to be let off the hook by Nick himself. Mm. Otherwise, he would never have come back.
Okay.
That's what I think.
By the end of the episode, Gail lets David stay at Audrey's house for a bit longer.
That's so kind.
Very nice of her,
isn't it?
And they have a nice little reunion hug, which Kylie sees coming out of the Rovers.
She's been in the Rovers all evening, getting drunk with Eva, complaining about her life, isn't she?
Yeah. And then she accuses Gail of betraying her and says that she's out of here. And she even said, you can keep the kids.
Yeah, she does. She says, you can keep the kids, I'm going.
I would have thought she was like, I'm taking the kids and I'm out of here. Are we seeing like a return of the Kylie of old, who would drop Max on Becky's doorstep at a drop of a hat?
Well, she spent the whole time saying to Eva, I love them kids, I love them kids, and all of her argument about how she wishes this had never happened mostly revolves around the fact that there's no father for her kids now.
Yeah.
And she never wanted it to be like that. And when David came along, she thought her whole lot of problems were finished. So a lot of why she wants to be back with David is to do with the kids, not to do with actually being in love with him, although she says she does. So that's not her main concern.
So what's going to happen now then? Do you think she will stay away, David will start to become more of a closer father to Max and Lily, and then she'll sort of see that, oh, he's not such a bad sport after all, and then we'll get back to
him? She's going to have to watch herself, because she's going to alienate herself and be the outsider if she's not careful. If she lets David get back in there...
Mm.
And then she looks like she's the problem one.
Yeah, well, it took a long time for Gail to accept Kylie as her daughter-in-law, so it probably wouldn't take very much for her to say, oh, look, I knew this is what she was always like, and she'd probably poison Kylie against her.
That's why I'm really surprised about the solidarity that Gail's been showing to Kylie, because she doesn't really owe her anything, because she never liked her to start with.
Mm.
And it wasn't anything bad. I mean, David didn't do anything bad to Kylie. It was Nick that he tried to kill.
Yeah.
So really, Kylie acting like a victim about what Dave is like is, to me, not something that I would listen to if I was Gail.
Mm.
Because, I just think that it's the whole thing between her and Gail is a bit weird.
Well, it looks like also with this storyline next week might turn into Nick getting some physio from Cal, because Leanne was showing interest in that.
Yeah.
So getting this new character in and spreading him into other storylines. So I don't know whether like Nick's recovery is going to be separate from the possible David and Kyla reunion. I don't know.
And we also mentioned we don't know why Cal would be involved in helping Nick recuperate, because Jenna is a physiotherapist and...
Yeah, why couldn't...
I mean, I know she's not got a license anymore, but does that really matter on Coronation Street?
I don't know how much it would stop her from being
giving
able to...
advice.
I don't think we've seen any scenes between those two together.
Actually, she's probably the sort of person who'd be like, I can't practice without a license. Are you mad? It's the most unethical thing I've ever done since I tried to sleep with my patient.
But she could have done some physio with Nick and then phoned up Mandy and said, look, you got what you wanted. I'm back in the medical profession again.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, my mum will be so happy.
Right, let's move on to talking about Brian and Julie then, and the sad Aww. Tale of their split
Just
up that we've
Romeo
seen this
and Juliet,
week.
Yeah, they were always destined to be.
Yeah.
No, I don't think so, because they're perfect. To me, they were the perfect Corrie couple.
I know. It's a real shame what's happened to them. Well, Julie gets a bit teary over with Maria on Sunday, because Maria is saying, oh, having Liam can be a bit of a nightmare sometimes. And Julie's like, oh, at least you've got children.
And how dare you complain about such a cherub? Yeah. I wish I had your problems.
Yeah, this was...
That's what people say to me all the time. I'm like, oh, I wish I wasn't so good looking. Get hassled all the time by modelling agencies, and they say, oh, I wish I had your problem. Like, no, trust me, you don't. Being this beautiful is a burden.
So at this stage, Brian and Julie are still together, aren't they? And she's just upset because of the adoption people, fostering people, turning them down.
Yeah. Brian says to her, sometimes dreams don't come true, and I'm really sad, but we'll have lots of exciting adventures together.
Maybe in Wales?
Maybe.
Yeah, I did feel... I mean, I do really like Brian, but when I was watching him in that scene, I was like, oh, you're the one that caused all of this. He's such a coward.
I wonder...
Because in the end, the news about everything that's happened broke, and I just wonder whether he would have... How would he have revealed it? Because he had to have decided today about this job in Wales. Was he just secretly hoping, do you think, by telling Marcus that somebody would do the dirty and... reveal it for him, because he just doesn't seem to have been capable of doing it. Although he did confess about telling Trudy that he didn't want to foster today, so he finally
fessed up.
Yeah,
but the whole thing gets kicked into gear by Beth, who, when she finds out that Julie gets rejected by the fostering people, she's like, I wouldn't take that laying down. Why don't you go and complain? You can always appeal about everything. I appealed about my benefits and they gave me a load of money.
So Julie thinks that's a wonderful idea. Phones up Trudy, but not there. Can't do it.
Brian's panicking and trying to put her off all the time. And then he goes and tells Marcus, I don't know whether I should give up my dreams. What should I do? And Todd comes and sits with them. And this is when he overhears what's going on between...
Yeah,
Julie and Brian, and he also, there's a bit of stuff between him and Sean, and Brian asks Todd if there's anything going on between him and Sean, and he says, I wouldn't date him if he's the last person in the world.
Oh yeah, that should be part of our other storyline as well, really. We'll come back to that.
But that's why I mentioned it. So
Wednesday was when we find out that Trudy is on leave until after Christmas, so Brian breathes a huge sigh of relief and thinking that at least that's one road that we don't have to cross for another few weeks, just desperately trying to put it off. He thinks that they should definitely not try and speak to somebody else.
Yeah, they should definitely wait, definitely. So Marcus then tells Todd about Brian's job in Wales. That makes Todd run off to tell Julie, Auntie Julie, because he loves his family that he's never seen before.
So evil. Todd.
So then Julie confronts Brian in the Rovers, and she's very, very upset.
Yeah, and he just dithers around. He doesn't know what to say.
Because she didn't know that he was looking at this job in Wales, because all the time when she's talking to him about fostering, she's like, yeah, but you're a teacher, you love children. And now he's sort of throwing that bit away. And not only that, but wanting to move away from all her friends and family and her job and everything.
Yeah, that's never even particularly been brought up, has it? He's certainly not put any thought into it, and she's not said about, well, what about Eileen and...
Yeah.
She
loves her family.
Yesterday's episode, she quite liked the idea of making jams and...
She just wants children. That's what she wants. She just wants children.
Hmm.
Right, so on Friday... Oh, Julie goes off and stays at Eileen's away from
evil Did you think that was a bit of an overreaction? Or was it just a nice cliffhanger for the end of an episode?
Well, knowing that we know about what Brian's actually like, no, not really. But based on the information that she had, I don't know what I would... If you suddenly said to me, I've been looking for... Or I found out from someone else that you've been... Actually, if I found out from someone else, if you'd have been looking at a job in a different country, I would be completely shocked and really cross.
But you wouldn't go and stay at your sister's house?
No, I wouldn't.
Only because you haven't got one.
No.
So, Friday's episode, Marcus is feeling very guilty about blabbing to Todd, and Todd is acting like he's guilty. He's insincere for the whole episode. Can't believe a word that comes out of his mouth.
I wish I'd never said anything now. It's caused so much problem. And then when Marcus confronts Todd and says, "Why did you tell her? You got me in trouble now." And he's like, "Oh, I don't regret anything because... If it helps Julie from a life of heartbreak, it's the right thing to do because he's just messing her around."
Yeah, and he somehow manages to convince Marcus to agree to this.
You know what, Todd? I've never realised before, but you're so morally upstanding and also incredibly handsome.
Brian tries to apologise, takes some lilies to the factory, but Julie tells him to sling his hook because she's all been sort of... very upset from the beginning of the episode, but some of the factory girls managed to
convince her to hear him out.
Yeah. So they go and have a talk on the bench. Just before the proper reunion and makeup can take place, Sally is texting Julie to tell her to get back to work. So Brian's left wondering, has he succeeded? Has he done enough to get Julie back?
Well, he says, "Look, I don't want to foster. I don't want to teach children. I don't have anything to do with children, in fact. But we can still be together." So she goes back to work. And then when they meet again in the second half of yesterday's episodes, he says, "Look, you come to Wales with me and we'll start a new life and it'll be brilliant." And she says, "I want children. I'll go to Wales if you'll have children. Once you get them, you'll like them."
that was quite big of her to... try and make some sort of compromise.
She'll do anything, though. She's desperate, isn't she? She's absolutely desperate for a child, just like Becky was.
Yeah.
And she says, he tells her, "No, I'm pretty sure I won't. And the only reason the fostering people turned down was because of me. Because I that's how much I don't want to have children." And she is disgusted. She's distraught that he lied. And he's taken her dreams away because she just wanted a life with him and some children. And he should have told her exactly how he felt from the beginning, which he did. And she decides that she's better off without him. She goes to the pub and cries with all her friends.
Do you think that Julie is at all at fault then? Because you're right, he had been saying all along that he doesn't really like children, and she's just not been picking up on it. And
he hasn't ever said firmly enough, though, has he? Because
said, "I don't want to foster," I guess.
He's been like, "Oh, well, okay, let's..." He's just kind of distanced himself from it, hasn't he? And said, "Oh, I'm not really sure this is the right thing." He's never said, "No, I don't want children."
But is that just because he wanted to make her happy, so he was thinking about her all along?
It's a difficult one, isn't it? Because this is one of the classic no way around this dilemma of children. Like, you either want children or you don't want children.
I wonder whether it would have made any difference if he had confessed to her sooner rather than leaving it, 2 weeks? Because I think part of the reason why she's so mad about it is because it's been 2 weeks that he's been lying to her rather than wanting to try and sort it out at the time.
I feel so sorry. You're not supposed to feel sorry for Brian, really, because he's lying and cowardly, but he just wanted a quiet life.
Yeah, he's not like evil and manipulative. He's just
a bumbling idiot with no real ability to see things from other people's point of view, I don't think.
Yeah. So poor old Brian and Julie. Looks like things are on the rocks there. Dev. So we saw last week only a couple of scenes with him in where he was deciding he wanted to get fit and he was doing his jog up the road and into the Rovers. But it all goes up a gear on Sunday's episode when Gary gets in touch with his old army friend Cal. He seems to be like one of these boot camp kind of trainers, shout at someone until they get fit kind of thing.
It's kind of funny because I didn't think that like at boot camp, people that run boot camps actually had to have been in the army.
Oh, probably.
I think you can just
don't have to be in the army here, but it helped.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, I like Mary. I thought this wasn't anything to do with the storyline particularly, but I like Mary telling Sophie about hot yoga, which is essentially like yoga, but they turn up the heaters at the community centre.
Yeah.
So we get to meet Cal, and
he's a funny chap, isn't he?
Yeah, he's a famous-ish actor. He's not like a no-name kind of new upstarting.
He's a prominent Asian actor, isn't he?
Yeah, but because we don't know,
because they're very limited roles, unfortunately, on television for Asian actors, he's not as well known as he could be.
No, and we don't know anything about Asian, well, about Indian Bollywood kind of cinema, do we? But he was in East Is East, which was a kind of a cult hit at the time. Not Bollywood. Well, I don't even know what I'm talking about.
No, I know you don't.
He was in East Is East, which was a comedy film of the 1998, 1999 or something, but we've never seen that. He was also the star of The Guru, which I had definitely heard of, but I never saw. But you said yesterday that you thought you'd seen that,
hadn't
you?
I've seen it. It wasn't very funny.
So, what are your first impressions of Cal?
I think his eyebrows need sorted out.
Yeah, he does seem to be going to the Emma Watson School of Eyebrow Acting. They just seem to be permanently slanted upwards together.
Needs to get I tell you what, if he gets some Botox, that'll sort that right out, because we're going to move him.
I think he's... I wouldn't say I dislike the character at the moment, because I think he's just trying to kind of make a big impact and be a bit like smarmy and, oh, aren't I great, and don't all the ladies fancy me.
Oh, that really wound me up. Like we said the other day, like, can we not have a new actor...
New hunk.
...come in without all the women round the table in the Rovers looking at him and going, oh, I'm going to go into my turn to talk to him. Ooh.
Even Sinead was getting involved with that, which I was quite surprised at. I could understand, like, who was it? Beth and Eva kind of drooling over him. But I would have thought Sinead would have been like,
I have never in my life Chesney. Sat around with my friends and oogled over men.
You but certainly wouldn't reason, over Cal.
The only reason I married you, darling, was because of your excellent personality. Because
I'm just so plain.
You're so plain and homely.
Thank you so much.
You're not really, you're very handsome.
Thanks.
Everyone's very handsome. He's very handsome.
Oh yeah, the listeners are so jealous that this is only a podcast, not a video podcast. Dev isn't really interested in working with Cal, and Cal isn't interested in Dev until... Cal starts bigging himself up, saying, "Oh, I'm so great. I could change you just like that. I'm the best." And Deb kind of just gets wound up, thinking, "Well, prove it then."
Nothing's ever gonna keep me down. Yeah, they're gonna prove how awesome they are to each other, which sounds like the beginnings of a perfect bromance.
I think they could end up being quite bosom buddies, because Deb hasn't really got many friends at the moment, has he?
They could be, but yeah. Because he also says to Cal, "Oh, I'm a single parent, and I want to see my kids grow up." And he's like, "Yeah, me too. We're both, you know."
Yeah, they've got things in common.
And he also reveals that Sunita was actually murdered, which Cal doesn't really know what to say about that, which is quite funny.
I don't know whether he's gonna be a long term character or not. I can't remember how long his contract is. But he obviously can't just be a fitness instructor and have fitness storylines forever. So
no,
it's kind of good
like
that they're
everyone else, won't he?
Yeah, developing a backstory for him
but
already.
But you know, in order for that to happen, he has to start going out with somebody.
Yeah, well.
So who's he going to go out with?
Michelle's been batting her eyelashes at him already as well.
On Wednesday, she wanted to start up a fitness plan with Cal, but Steve says they can't afford it because they don't have enough money.
That just made me think. I wonder if, like, Steve is going to start something between him and Andrea, who we still haven't met yet, and that might drive Michelle into the arms of Cal.
Yeah.
Could do.
Their eyes can meet as she's doing a sit-up.
Yeah. So, Wednesday, much happens. Michelle was
just
saying...
No, I just said what happened. Yeah. Yeah, that's all that happened on Wednesday. So, on Friday, we have... Dev posing for his before photo, and you'd think after what happened with him and that advert,
what, the giant naked Dev?
Yeah, you'd think that he would shy away from having horrible photos taken of him.
He didn't particularly look like he wanted to get it done, to be fair on him.
Well, Carl needs it for his portfolio, so he can prove how buff he's made Dev.
Yeah.
And in the park, he takes Dev to do this fitness routine, and I'm not sure whether either of them have ever seen anybody doing exercises, because that's not what a travelling lunge looks like.
Cal was doing some fairly good impressions of travelling lunges, but Dev was just kind of just striding, pulling the tires.
But Cal's going, travelling lunges.
Do people actually do fitness things like this in the park?
Yeah. And
how do they like not get attacked by chavs?
What do you mean, why they get attacked by chavs?
Well, you just thought there'd be all the teenagers there, like, stealing all this stuff.
Do you think, Michael, there's no wonder you don't go out so much. That's what you think happens. Marauding chavs attack you at random. They have this thing called British Military Fitness, and they just do it usually you do it in a class.
Yeah.
But because Cal's a personal trainer, it's one-on-one.
Yeah. We did get to see...
I just can imagine your vision of, like, chaotic Britain with all these chaps throwing chips at people.
They would. They could, throw a chip at him and say, pull the tyre a bit further, you can have this chip off the ground. Maria gets to see him, though, because she's out walking Aussies. So that was quite funny.
She goes and tells the excruciatingly boring story about what happened with Ozzy pulling the tyre in the Rovers while Julie's crying, and it's just not funny, is it?
No, not particularly. That was all we got to see of that storyline. I guess it's just going to carry on with him getting him fit. Do you think he's actually going to get fit?
No, of course he's not.
I don't think he will.
It would mean that the actor would have to go on a diet and fitness regime.
Maybe he wants to.
Throwaway storyline. Yeah, well, didn't we hear all this stuff about Sam Aston, who plays Chesney, getting all buffed up, and they never used that?
No,
because we thought
actually.
They were gonna.
There were a couple of scenes of Chesney lifting weights, weren't there?
We thought that was gonna be part of a scene to hit for him to win Katie back by proving how buff he was. Nope.
No.
I think what we've learned is that we're really terrible at figuring out stories.
Well, Chesney and Cal could still team up to do some fitness together in the new year. But I guess you're right about saying that Cal's just gonna end up with somebody.
Yeah.
Some
single
otherwise,
lady. There's no other reason. Like you say, you can't carry on being the fitness guy forever.
No.
The only alternative is that he opens a gym on the street, which I think would be excellent.
That'd be quite good.
That'd be really cool because you get all of the right aged female characters in there because they all go to the gym. Because there's a throwaway thing about Eva's Zumba class or whatever. Mm. No, surely nobody believes that these women look like that with no exercise and eating whatever they want from the chippy. They could all be in there, and then you could have like senior class. And you
yeah,
could have all
it would get a bit Hollyoaks if it was just like the young fit boys and girls pumping iron and stuff. But if they had like Gloria balancing on an exercise ball and
it'd be quite funny.
That would be quite funny. I don't know whether any of the other soaps have gyms.
A gym.
Where would they open it?
There's
not really anywhere for it to go.
It's not really typical of the sort of lifestyle that they want to portray in. It'd be more like the sort of thing you'd have in, like you say, like a Hollyoaks or maybe some kind of American soap where everyone's a bit more affluent and can afford to spend the time.
Yeah. Okay, Tanner's Got Talent then. So we're back to... He's been reminiscing about his days as talent scout. But the first scene with him this week was him doing his guitar with his lollipop, which I thought was hilarious.
All the way through this, Rita has... As she meant to go on with being dismissive and saying he needs to act his age and not taking anything he does seriously.
Yeah, is she still mad at him for trying to sell her ring or selling
probably
her ring a few weeks
actually,
ago?
Because
that was never brought up, but she's been really horrible all week, just kind of, yeah.
Uncharacteristically horrible, because they're quite a nice couple, aren't they?
Yeah, why can't she support him trying to do something with his retirement and earn a bit of money as well? I don't really get her reaction to this. So this is also Gloria involved in the storyline, because in the Rovers Dennis is telling Gloria all about his talent scout days, and
maybe she's a bit jealous too because she had a career in music and she doesn't want him to get, you know, she wants to relive her glory days too, but
I don't think
maybe.
She does though, because I think it's been brought up and she's like, you won't get me on the stage again, but
no, but
maybe she's just putting up a front.
I think maybe she's just, I don't know, maybe she just misses it.
She does like having a bit of a sing every now and again.
Well,
on Wednesday, he's arranged a meeting with his mate Richie from The Power, who had a number 13 in the 60s, apparently.
Did we ever look this up?
I think we can safely say that it's a fake band.
I know, but see, I'm so used to people appearing in soaps and like special guest stars,
especially
in American things, where everyone's like, wow, amazing, look at this person that's famous. And I'm like, I guess they could be, because I've never heard of them. And it turns out that they're like incredibly successful at some bizarre thing I've never heard of.
Yeah,
the, and like you were about to say,
the guy who played Richie did look like he could have been famous.
He looked like a washed up rock star.
Yeah, yeah. They should have brought in, Dennis did have a storyline in the early 60s about getting Brett Falcon or something was the stage name of his act, and then the guy actually released a single in the UK and it charted.
Oh,
so
yeah, I think we could have, we talk about that?
I don't know, I think maybe we have. But yeah, they could have brought that back. But anyway, they all have this meeting with Richie later in the bistro. He's like, yeah, a bit over the hill he looks, washed up rock star, like you said, big mullet, red and black striped
wearing
suit,
sunglasses,
giant sunglasses.
Inside the house is always a bit of a giveaway.
Yeah, Gloria's heart is set aflutter at the sight of him. In fact, he manages to attract the attention of quite a few ladies on the street, doesn't he, somehow? Mary was there fawning all over him on Friday. It's like saying, oh, what was she said about being single and available?
She says something about, oh, I'm single and available, I'm only joking, but no, I am.
No, I have, yeah. So Norris probably should try and foster that friendship between them to try and push him away from her.
Yeah.
But yeah, they basically just arranged to have a gig next Friday.
That's it, really.
That's almost it. And Stella finds out about it at the last moment. She's kind of a bit bemused by it all.
And there's a bit of animosity between Stella,
Gloria and Rita
over this whole thing, because Gloria is turning into a bit of a groupie.
Yeah.
And Rita's like, this is beneath me.
Yeah. Bad show for Rita this week.
Yeah.
Not been impressed. So let's just finish off by talking about the very little to say about the Sean Broker storyline. So the main bits really was Sean is lending more and more money to Todd because Todd is fluttering his eyelashes at him. And then on Wednesday he tells Sean that he really, really likes him but wants to take it slow. Touches his arm. But we kind of knew it was fake, but then when Sean turned his back, Todd gives like his evil look at him, like, ha ha ha, my plan is working. So do you think the only reason that he's saying this is because he wants money from Sean?
Yeah, I think he's that manipulative.
Gonna break before little Sean's heart.
I think so, and it's gonna be awkward for Eileen.
Yeah, yeah, it is actually, when
it all falls down around her ears. But there's also something brewing between Todd and Marcus, because on Friday they're all sitting in the booth with Julie.
Yeah.
And Maria and Marcus do some awkward canoodling, and Marcus looks a bit embarrassed to be doing it in front of Todd, and they have these few sort of like glances. So there's obviously going to be a love triangle there.
Yeah.
Like I said, shouldn't happen.
With Sean involved in as well. Sean's going to be the one that's left.
There's got to be a love triangle with three people.
Not much. Sure, there's Sean, Maria, Marcus,
no, but I don't count
Todd.
Maria because she's not gay.
No.
I think she's going to get dropped like a stack of hot potatoes.
Yeah. And then
I guess it makes perfect sense, but it's just kind of galling that just because they finally got three gay characters in, they can have a love triangle.
Yeah. Is it the first gay love triangle? I don't know.
Well, in Coronation Street, it definitely is.
No, it wasn't. It's not, though, because we had Todd and the other one was Todd and Sarah Louise and Carl the nurse, so that wasn't, they weren't all gay. Yeah, so it's I'm sure this is going to be an inevitable storyline. I don't particularly mind because I quite like Marcus, and Todd's still quite fun to watch, as much as I'm like scowling at him whenever I see him on screen at the moment. This could be good. It's nice to have Maria in the storyline again.
Oh well.
And we saw Liam, that we thought was maybe played by a new actor.
I think so.
He's in it so infrequently,
it made such
and
a
children
big deal
do
about
change.
The fact she was talking to him and showing his face and getting him to have lines, it made me think.
I don't know. We'll have to look that up. We should have looked it up, really.
We're not very good at this, are we?
I know. We've left it so late to do the podcast as well. I think we could have done so much more research. Right. That was it on the street this week. Actually, having talked about it, it wasn't too bad. I was a bit down on it at the beginning, but there were some good things.
Slagging it off.
Brian and Julie's storyline has been my favourite this week.
Is it?
Yes.
I like it when people are evil to each other, but I don't like it when they're sad and cry.
So you've enjoyed Todd then?
Todd's too much of a low-key villain for me. I just love Nick right now. I never thought I'd say that in my life, but Nick's my favourite character in soap at the moment.
Yeah, he's good to watch. I do wonder still whether they're going to mellow Todd out eventually, though. He can't be evil forever if they want to keep him in.
Well, mind you, what about Tracy? Why can't they have a male Tracy on the street?
But everyone knows that Todd's not really like that.
Oh, nonsense.
Right, that's enough for street talk. Let's move on to next section, which is not a character profile. Okay, so yeah, we are not doing a character profile this week. Partly the reason is because we've both had really busy weeks and not had time to put anything together. We also thought that we would be recording very, very late on Friday, so we wouldn't really have time to do one. And also because we've got the Conversation Street Awards coming up soon, so we thought we'd talk a little bit about that. So listeners from that have been with us for a while will hopefully remember our Conversation Street Awards from 2012, which were... We had 11 categories, very northern sounding awards, where we say who we've liked over the past year. So we're going to do things a little bit differently this year. And although we are still going to be deciding who the winners are between us, we thought it would be quite fun to announce our nominees early so that you, the listeners, could tell us who you think as well. And it's also...
Tell us we're wrong.
Well, it's also good because if there's any awards that Gemma and I don't agree with, then we'll go with the listeners' vote, I think. So.
What if they've got a third option?
We will just see who's got the votes out of the ones that we're choosing from.
Oh, okay. It's a popularity contest, everybody, is what he's trying to say.
So we'll run down the awards, say the nominations, and then you'll be able to vote online because we set up a poll with SurveyMonkey. So if you head on over to our... blog, hopefully later this evening or maybe Sunday, you'll be able to vote and tell us who you think. And with this SurveyMonkey, with the version that we set up, we can only have like up to 10 categories per poll, which is a pain because we've got 11 awards. So we're going to do it over 2 weeks. We're going to have a poll for the first 6 awards this week, and then you'll be able to vote in the next ones the week after that. So we're going to start off with our Top Lass Award, which is where we recognise the best female character in Coronation Street in the year. We've got 5 nominees for all of these awards, and our best female nominees go to Carla, Hayley, Sylvia, Kirsty, and Kylie. So we don't want to particularly say too much about it and give away who we think might win already, but Carla's been amazing this year, and she's definitely one of my favourite actresses. She's like... very down to earth. She says it like it is. She's kind of quite a big character, but without being like tarty or anything. She's very confident, and
yeah,
you really like Carla as well.
Yeah, she's one of my
favorite. Hayley, how could we not say Hayley? She's been through so much this year with Roy's breakdown storyline and now her cancer, and she's not
also just one of like the most iconic characters on the street
and the nicest as well.
She's managed to escape unscathed through her storylines without coming out looking like a horrible cow.
Yeah.
Like they've done to a lot of other...
She's not going to be in the awards next year, so...
No.
Sylvia, although we've been a little bit down on the actress for how she left this year, we both have really loved everything that we've seen from Sylvia this year. Was the gambling stuff earlier this year, or was that last year? I don't remember. But whether that was this year or not, she's been such a backbone to the Roy and Hayley storyline. Particularly the Roy one where he was going mad. And she's had loads of funny lines, so we've both loved Sylvia, so you could vote for her. Kirsty, well, I think she probably won the Top Lass Award last year, and she was still in it for the good first 4 months of the year. So if you were... think that she has been better than all the other ladies so far this year, you can vote for her. And then we've got Kylie as well. Big player, prominent obviously, role, this year. Very prominent role because of everything in the plats. And eagle-eyed viewers may see that we are not even nominating Tina McIntyre because she gets enough nominations as it is.
She
we don't really
need...
like her that much.
No, every time she appears in a scene, we get annoyed.
Yeah. So, yeah, Carla, Hayley, Sylvia, Kirsty, and
Kylie.
It's
our awards.
Top Lad Award, which is our best male. We have Roy, David, Nick, Lewis, and Steve up for nomination there. And it was definitely harder picking nominees for the best male because it's the... obviously in Coronation Street the women are the most iconic characters. Roy's been fairly prominent in the show all year with his breakdown storyline and now Hayley's cancer, so I couldn't miss him out. David, another one, big name all year. I think he's been acting incredibly well, showing a huge range of emotions, and couldn't not nominate him.
Well, I always like a bit of David on the street. Yeah, got to have nominate him, I think.
Yeah, Nick, bit of a surprise nomination, but we have really grown to like him a lot more in the last few months since he's been going a bit mad, a bit evil.
Yep.
Lewis, because of being such a great villain. And
yeah, he's excellent.
Steve as well, always there.
Always in the background.
Lots of funny lines.
Gurning.
Yeah, making us laugh. Next award.
We've also got the A-Up Award for the Best Newcomer. So our nominees are kind of limited to the people that have actually appeared in the show.
For the first time this year,
Is it only these five?
I think these are the five main roles that have started this year.
Yeah, so we've got Tim Metcalf, the feckless dad of Faye, who is having a relationship with one of the street's most, I don't know, long-serving women, Sally. Steph Britton, who we've decided to nickname Slaggy Steph.
Not minded her so much in the last week or two.
She's been keeping her head down, working in the bistro.
Yeah, now Ryan's not there for her to lust after. Over.
Maybe she's going to go out with Carl Nazir, who's our
He's too old for
her. I don't know. You know they don't care about that anymore.
Yeah, if Cal has made a big impact on you already, maybe you'll vote for him as the best newcomer.
Yep, and also Sinead Tinker.
Yeah.
Who's Beth's niece.
Yeah.
Who now has a factory job, so she's obviously going to stay in the street forever. quite a funny, interesting character going out with Chesney.
Yep.
And finally, evil, scheming Grace Piper, friend of Faye, who's a wrong'un.
Yes, we've
she's not her friend anymore, is she?
No, and we haven't really seen her since they broke up, so I don't know whether we've seen the last of Grace or not. But
it just seems bizarre to leave it like that.
Yeah, but if Grace has been your favourite new character this year, then you can give her a vote. The Wrong'un Award is for the best villain. So we've had quite a load of villains this year on Coronation Street. Some big ones and some little ones. Like Grace is one of our nominees again for that. Also Lewis Archer, who was instrumental. He's trying to cause Gail's downfall.
Well, he pretty much managed to screw out of a lot of money.
Yeah. Kirsty, who again, I think she was the one that won the award last year. She was very evil right until the last moment, until she confessed. Carl has been the main villain of the summer after he burnt the Rovers down and then got carted off by the cops a few months ago. And also Christian we're having as our fifth nominee for that, because he's been pretty evil since he's come back and trying to scam Hayley off from her money.
Yeah.
So those are our five nominees for that.
And we've also got the Bayek Award for the most shocking moment.
This is a really difficult one, because now we're doing this podcast, and I try to avoid spoilers, but it's very, very difficult. There's not so much that happens that particularly shocks me, so the nominees for this year...
I don't think
year,
any of these shocked me.
Is it because you knew that they were going to happen,
probably,
though?
Our nominees are when Fizz calls the police and owns up to abducting Jack when her and Tyrone escaped from Kirsty. Yeah, to Anglesey.
Yeah, and I thought they were...
Kate Middleton and Prince Charles.
Prince William. Yeah, so she fessed up, which I was quite surprised at. I thought they were going to go and have some adventures in Anglesey for a bit.
I think that surprised me. Also, in the same storyline, when Kirsty confessed in court that she was actually an evil scheming cat.
Yeah, she burst in and said, it was me, it was all my fault.
Yeah. The Rovers fire when Carl set fire to the pub and... killed Sunita.
Yeah, so I mean, we all knew that it was going to happen, but just the way it happens, it's kind of a big moment, so we still think that could count as a nominee.
When David tried to crash the van that Nick and David were in.
Yeah, and then like when the van was there in the middle of the road and they said a lorry comes smashing into the side of them. That's if you said Bayek when you watched that, then maybe you vote for that one.
Yep. And finally, the bombshell that was finding out that Hayley has terminal cancer.
Yeah. Next award we've got is the Terrar Award for the best exit. So we've seen quite a lot of people leave this year. Some have had proper exits, and then we've had the likes of Ken and Kevin, who mysteriously disappeared.
They went to Canada.
Yeah, but
Germany.
We've chosen five who had big-ish exits, so we're not counting Mandy just leaving in the back of a taxi. But we've got Lewis Archer's exit when he recorded his video message for Gail and Audrey and the Platts, making his little cocktail and saying that he's got all their money.
It's Bellini.
Kirsty, her actual exit episode where she was in prison talking to Tyrone was pretty unimpressive, but everything that led up to that we can count as her exit. Sunita's exit was the rover's fire, explosive. And then yeah, although we didn't see Carl put the pillow over her face. Did he even do that, or did he just disconnect his breathing tube?
I can't remember
because we didn't get to see it. So that was a bit of a mysterious one, that death. Paul left after the racism storyline, sort of with a teary Eileen sort of telling him to go because she's fed up of him. And then Carl as well, who got married to Stella, but by the end of the day, he was in the clink.
Sad.
Yep. Our seventh award is the Flaming Nora Award for the Best Redhead, which is obviously very important for Coronation Street because they've got a proud tradition of ginger characters.
Yep, so nominations are almost always the same every year.
Until they bring in some new gingers.
We've got Fizz Stape, Chesney Battersby Brown, Gary Windass, Rita Tanner, and Craig Tinker.
Yep, so, well, you know what kind of storylines they've been in. Fizz has been in it not very much this year because she's kind of, her and Tyrone have had a bit of a break after the domestic abuse storyline. Chesney's been mostly involved in the love triangle with Ryan and Katie. Now he's got his job at the kebab shop. Gary Windass's main storyline, I guess, has been all to do with the surrogacy. So he's quite big around the middle of the year. Rita's been in the background, I guess, but offering sage advice, of course. We also got that scene where she got mugged in the park, if you remember that. And then Craig Tinker was the one that was key to unveiling Carl's evil scheme of burning down the rovers.
Now, can I just say, there are three ways you can vote for this award, and it's completely up to you the way you do it. You can either vote for the favourite character that you've enjoyed watching, or you can vote for who has the reddest hair. Or you can vote for who best portrays the qualities of a redhead.
Yeah, up to you.
It's totally up to you. Hello Love Award for the best new couple. So we've got Jenna and Sophie, our lesbian lovebirds.
Yeah.
Who had to get together by ruining Jenna's career, so obviously a high stakes romance there.
Yeah.
Rob and Tracy, the two wrong'uns that run Barlow's Buys, is it called?
Yeah. Very
evil,
fiery evil relationship.
Scheming, but very
passionate
love affair there. Chesney and Sinead, a bit of a lukewarm beginning. But do they belong together? Is it true love?
Yeah, is he going to end up going back to Katie? Who knows?
Sally and Tim, a bit of a midlife crisis for Sally there with a bit of rough.
Yeah.
Do you like them as the best couple on the street?
I wouldn't want to give my opinion at the moment.
And finally, I wasn't asking you.
Oh, rhetorical.
It was a rhetorical question. You've been doing that all the way through. Jason and Eva, who seem like they should probably be from Hollyoaks.
Yeah.
Our glam,
beautiful couple.
Yeah, the glossy duo of the street. And we also have our Ecky Thump Award for the best fight. Now, this is quite good because if you go onto our blog, you'll be able to find nice little clips of all of these fights.
Yeah, because you might not be able to remember these quite so well.
Yeah, so we went through a longer list and we broke them down to we watched each one to make sure that we were definitely picking the best five, and these are the best five fights of the year. Nick and Peter scrap over Leanne, which happened on the 7th of January.
Yeah, that was started off in the bookies and then ended up outside on the street, so.
Yep, that was quite a good changing of sets.
Yep.
Gary fights Ryan as he suspects he's coming between Chesney and Sinead on the 15th of March.
Yep. On the 13th of September, after Carl married Stella, he then had a showdown with Dev behind the bar in the Rovers, and they had a bit of a scrap there. Dev ended up getting a bottle whacked on the back of his head, so that was quite exciting.
Always like a bit of bottle action in a fight. Kylie and Tina catfight in the Rovers, and then Liz broke it up on the 14th of October. That was quite good because we had a new character arrive right in the middle of it. Yeah. Well, not a new character.
Returning character.
Yeah, that's better.
And then finally, on the 17th of November, a drunk David picked a fight with Peter.
Outside the Rovers.
Yes, and Gail was like, don't hurt him.
Don't hurt my son.
Yeah, so who would you like out of that? You can have a vote for that one. We're now on to our penultimate award. Very important award. This is our award for the silliest story, the Bobbins Award. There's always lots of silly stories that we kind of watch thinking, oh, I wish this story would go away,
or this
is a bit ridiculous. This year, our five nominees are the Katie, Ryan and Chesney love triangle, which we hated because we don't like Katie, we don't like Ryan, we got a little bit fed up by Chesney being so miserable this year.
It was just silly.
Yeah, it just went on for too long.
Yeah. Lloyd thinks he's thrown out Mandy's tortoise.
Tortoise.
As you know, I didn't like this one, which is why it's here, because I thought the whole thing was stupid and not funny at all.
But he got a load of ashes in his face.
Yeah. we also have nominated the Rovers regulars do the full Monty, because why? I mean, it's been so long since that movie was popular. Do people really still care about... They might as well do...
I thought that was very silly.
They might as well do a Coronation Street charity character where everyone's nude next year.
Calendar, yeah.
Yeah.
Paul is accused of racism. The Paul Under Fire storyline was just really silly. And I quite like the idea of them sort of tackling racism and people and casual racism.
They
but
didn't.
The whole play the white man and it's spiralling out of control.
The most obscure... one I've ever heard.
Yeah, and then everybody turned against Paul. It just got very silly.
Of all the horrible things you can say, all the horrible phrases that have been invented to belittle black people in the world, to pick that one as your showcase.
It wasn't just that, it was how it all continued.
Yeah,
as well.
It was silly.
And the last one is it's the developing storyline currently between Peter and Tina, and the whole idea that they would
get together.
Especially when he's just about to marry Carla and not enjoying that at all particularly, and it's still not finished, unfortunately.
It's not just the ones we didn't enjoy, though. These are all completely implausible, and they kind of, like, challenge your suspension of disbelief, don't they?
Well, this one does a little bit, yeah.
And finally, we have our That's Champion Award for the best storyline.
Yeah, it's not all been bad this year.
No, there's been five good storylines.
For example, Lewis plotting his revenge on Gail was excellent at the beginning of the year, and it culminated in his video exit, so maybe you'll vote for that one. The Rovers fire leading to Carl's downfall, that was quite exciting as well. Enjoyed Carl being
had
a villain
in
that
it.
One. Yeah, the fire.
People dying, two people died.
That relationship that he was trying to build up with him and Craig to try and make him think that he was the one that started
it. That was so funny.
And then all leading on the wedding, so that was quite cool. We put together Roy's breakdown and Hayley's...
See, you didn't agree with me about this.
Well, I thought that Roy's crazy cropper breakdown was kind of separate to the Hayley's ailing cancer storyline, but they kind of flowed together, and part of the reason why Hayley's cancer storyline...
ever got discovered.
Yeah, it was because of Roy, so... The croppers, basically, we can put together in that storyline there.
And who's the daddy storyline between David and Nick? It's been epic. It's
Certainly
been a year-long storyline. It's still going on.
It's had its ups and downs, and it's still going. But it's definitely
been one
quite
of the
exciting.
Main storylines, and I'm sure there are people that enjoy watching it. I know that I do now.
Yeah.
Now that
but is it enough to win our award? You'll have to wait and see.
And finally...
The surrogate storyline, which that's stopped, that's over with, but it was definitely quite a big storyline in the first half of the year.
And I haven't seen that baby for a while. I don't even believe it exists anymore.
We were pretty fed up of it almost until the baby came, and then when the inevitable happened and Tina decided to keep the baby, it suddenly got interesting for a bit. Mm-hmm. So I did quite enjoy that at some parts. So there are 11 awards, and if you go onto the blog later today and for the rest of the week, you'll be able to vote for the first six categories, and then in a week time you'll be able to vote for the rest. And like we said, we're still going to be the people that decided the awards, but we'd be really, really grateful if you could just do a few clicks and tell
us
who you think.
We will announce the reader's choice, won't we, for each
category. Yeah, definitely.
So it's not...
Yeah.
You're not just voting to solve arguments between... stop us from getting divorced.
Yeah, and if you'd like to email us your votes and give us some reasons as well, that'd be perfect. We can still count that in the poll, because we'd like to know why you're picking who you would pick.
And I'm sure that you will be tempted to do this, so feel free if you think that we have left something off.
Oh, yeah.
That you'd like...
Tell us we're wrong, please.
Yeah, and if you've got another ginger we've forgotten, you can let us know.
Yeah. Well, Eric Babbage's wife almost got in there for that one episode appearance, and the Welsh bed and breakfast owner as well.
See, we were already undermining our shortlist ourselves, so you can do it as well.
Yeah, so just head over to our blog, conversationstreet@podbean.com, and have a vote. We'll also be posting the links on Facebook and Twitter as well.
And of course, we're going to have a special glitzy ceremony at some point throughout the year, where we hand out the awards and all the actors and actresses can come, because, as you know, I think that there aren't enough awards.
So, well, we do have some little pictures for all the awards that I put together.
So we might print them up on card and post them to the agents.
Or we could just tweet them or whatever. Yeah, anyway, that is our Conversation Street Awards.
Do you think we should make certificates?
Oh, no, we could do,
couldn't we? Do you know what? Because there's such a thing as 3D printers now, we could probably print them up. That would be amazing.
But we'd have to get a picture of...
In 3D. I knew there was a flaw, but I didn't want to say it because it was just funny.
Well, our Bobbins Award is naked Adam Rickett doing a stupid pose, so we'd have to get Adam Rickett here pose for us naked.
Yeah, I think he'd do it if he had enough money.
Right, let's get on with some other news now in the cabin. Okay, right, this is the cabin, the news section of the podcast. We're not going to be in the cabin long today. Rita's giving us evil looks. Also, there's only one real bit of news for us to talk about. But it was something that was in the Manchester Evening News this week about the opening of the old Coronation Street set and the proposals that have been put to Manchester Town Hall for the tours that are going to go on there. And I was quite surprised that they need to put these proposals to the town hall. What's it got to do with them?
Just local politics nonsense, isn't it? Keep them in jobs, aren't you?
Yeah, they're all moving out to the new set now. I've been following some people's Twitter accounts this week, and they're saying, I've been watching all the props being moved from one set to another. It must be quite sad, like feel like the end of the era. But again, end of the era.
That's a joke.
But also going and seeing the props in a new place.
Must be a bit surreal.
Yeah. Yeah. Definitely.
Anyway.
The planning permit has got everything that's going to be on the tour, and I have to say it looks absolutely amazing. And I was already excited about going to visit the old street, but this has made
me... This has actually raised my
hype levels. I'm on the hype tram for this. Because I never really thought about all the inside sets and everything when I thought about going to visit the old... I thought it was just the old street because...
All I would imagine it would have been was, right, here we are, this is so-and-so's house, you can take photos... and in half an hour we're going to be leaving out of this door. Here's a gift shop.
Yeah, but if this all goes through, it's actually going to be quite a big thing. And I'm just reading this straight from the Manchester Evening News website, so all credits to them. But there's going to be an introduction to the tour, the site and its history, bringing in some of the street, including characters, props and memories. And then they're going to go down to the Corridor of the Stars, an opportunity to look into the dressing rooms of some of the famous actors and cast members.
That's awesome.
That's very exciting.
Do you think they're going to have people like, who's the guy that played Gandalf?
Ian McKellen.
Yeah, I think they're going to have things like that.
Or like old
super,
stars.
Because it says famous actors.
Well, some of the people in Coronation Street are quite famous.
Yeah, but you know what I mean.
It'd be interesting to know whether we get to see any old costumes during that. So are we going to get to see Bette Lynch's?
That'd be amazing.
What we won't get to see is Hayley's red coat if Julie auctions it off for charity. So that should be quite cool. Good for Gemma's fashion spot.
I could do, I'm live in the Corridor of Stars.
Then we get to do the Green Room and look at Coronation Street's future, spoilers, ITV's investment at Media City and upcoming events
and
news.
It's just like the corporate bit where they try to, whoever sponsors it gets to have their logo, probably.
Yeah. I wonder if we'll get to see any meerkats there.
Do you think Ginsters will sponsor it?
Then we get to see the pre-show section, which is a small space introducing some of the most loved characters with objects, graphics and film. So
that sounds like the introduction. They go, welcome to Coronation Street. You're about to experience the da-da-da-da-da.
Yeah, so I don't understand. This seems to be... I thought this was in order that we'd be doing it, so I don't really know why this bit's here.
The pre-show, that reminds me of when you go to the Harry Potter tour.
Yeah.
And you get stuck in that room and they show you a film.
Yeah, maybe it'd be that. Then we get to have a tour of Stage 1, which is... I think that's where all the inside sets are, if I'm right. I might be completely wrong. But it says it will feature an introduction film highlighting the best moments of the street. I assume that's just going to be that thing that's on their website at the moment, that 5-minute long.
Okay, boring!
Seen it before. Then it's a guided tour and exploration of Stage 1 with access to some iconic sets. So yes, that's all the inside sets and the houses, which would be really cool to see. And we get to see them all from different angles and everything.
That's going to be... I'm so excited.
Because we get to see, like, all the little nitty-gritty details of it that you
we
don't necessarily pick up.
Go, oh, look, that's where... Do you remember that? And
right. We are going to have to take our red bits of art so that when we go to Tina's flat set, we can hold them up and see whether it's the same bit of art as us. I wonder what else we'll see. We won't get to see, like... Audrey's house, because that's obviously not a film there.
I hope it's the same thing as you is in the Harry Potter world, where you're allowed to take as many photos as you like.
Yeah, I really do hope so. Yeah, that'd be cool.
It'd be annoying if you got there and they're like, no photos, please.
Yeah. Then there is a unique display that shows some of the props and furniture used in the show. Famous furniture, such as...
Statue used to hit... Oh, over the head. Yeah. If you say to me a famous prop, that was the only thing I can ever remember.
apparently throughout the tour there will be themed stopping points highlighting TV moments, behind the scenes techniques and production. And then a conclusion of the tour, which is when you get to step through the bistro doors and like, out onto Coronation
it's
Street.
It's like in the Harry Potter tour when you go through the doors and you're in the Great Hall.
Yeah.
As you can see, that's the only set I've ever been on.
This will give visitors free access to all the famous landmarks,
yay,
gardens and alleyways.
That's amazing. The gardens?
Yeah.
It's going to get trashed. We've got to go really early.
I know. There'll also
Sally's going to be really upset if people muck up
mind the begonias. Yeah, there's also going to be a gift shop and a cafe for visitors.
Now, why didn't they just put it in Roy's Rolls?
Yeah.
And, of
maybe
course,
it is.
They've got to serve Hot Pot.
Yeah. Hot Pot, Newton and Ridley's.
That's it.
Stuff marrow. Yeah, so it's that sounds like an amazing tour, and I think anybody, particularly if you're in the UK, should really take the opportunity to go and visit this next year if it all goes through and this planning application is granted, because it looks like it's going to be an amazing day out. We'll definitely be there at some point. And we'll
I hope we can get tickets. I'm really
I'm
worried.
Sure we'll get tickets. I'm sure we'll get
you
tickets.
You know what I'm like.
I know. Yeah, so it'll be amazing, and we'll be able to have like a special podcast about our visit there and everything, so very very much looking forward to that. Lots
of
fun.
We should make a weekend of it and go up there and like stay overnight and then go to some of the places that they filmed in Manchester.
Yeah I mean we saw Canal Street earlier this year when we went to the Lesser Gallery just because we happened to
only like, out of the window.
Yeah,
we should
go there properly.
We should do like a mid, like when we come back from Coronation Street, a podcast that night that we record.
Yeah,
saying,
first impressions.
Oh my god, it was amazing, you guys. Or, it was awful.
Don't bother going.
It wasn't even Coronation Street. It was cardboard cutouts.
Oh, it'll be good. And that's pretty much it for the news. Apart from the fact that, don't forget, next Friday, I think at 9 p.m. on ITV1, is going to be the Tech Santa charity Christmas thing. And that's going to feature a couple of Coronation Street bits, such as... they had that netball match between Emmerdale and Coronation Street, which Coronation Street won, so we'll get to see a bit of that. And also the fairy tale of Weatherfield, which...
You told me a bit more about that, didn't you? About what's going to happen.
Did I?
Yeah, I was asleep.
With what? The fairy tale of Weatherfield bit?
When, yeah.
Yeah, there's going to be... there's a little video, because on the ITV website at the moment, they're showing like a clip every day, or a Christmassy picture every day, or interview every day in like as an Advent thing. And there was a video this week which had... it was mostly Alan and Jenny talking about singing for the fairy tale of Weatherfield, but it also had a couple of other actors there mentioning it. And they're unlike the... Was it All I Want for Christmas Is You they did last year, which was a quite funny clip. They're going to properly show, they're probably going to actually have them singing along, so we get to see how good a singer everyone is. And it's going to be the chance for Kim Lomas or Mars or whatever surname she's using at the moment to show off her singing talent. And Alan Halsall, he's already said, well, I'm not the best.
See, I always get sad when I think about it, because even though I've got no ambition to be an actress, and I never don't think there is a scenario in which I would find myself thrust into the limelight as an actress on Coronation Street. I always get sad when they do things like this, because I know I'm rubbish at singing and I wouldn't be able to do it.
Lots of actors are good at singing.
I know,
as well.
They are, aren't
it's
they?
Like stage school, Bushy Mum. Yeah, so I expect next week we'll watch bits of that and then record the podcast. I think that's what we did last year. We maybe recorded a bit of the podcast, okay, fast forwarded to the Corrie bit, so we'll be able to talk about it on next week's episode, hopefully.
Well, I thought David smashed it last year during the performance of that song, so I'm expecting good things from him this year.
Right, let's round off the show with some feedback. So we'll start off with our email from Tivor, who says, well, she agrees with us, it was a good curry week last week. She enjoyed nearly everything.
There's a fashion section here that I feel I should take charge of.
Go on then.
She says, Tina's dress barely cleared her backside. Tracy's dress was understated. I thought Sally suited her, and I really liked what Fizz and Hayley were wearing.
Ah, see, she agrees with me about Sally. I quite like Sally and Hayley. I don't remember. Oh, Fizz, you liked the coat, didn't you?
I loved Fizz's coat. You told me there was a thread about it.
There was a thread on the Digital Spy soap forums about
it.
No, I did look at it in the end, but nobody replied. It was just somebody saying that they really liked Fizz's coat. So that was it.
See, when Kate Middleton wears something, I can find out what it is within 3 hours.
Yeah, I think it, Kate and Fizz aren't really on the same level.
Nobody helps me look for Fizz's clothes.
She's got a theory about Christian, saying, I think Christian may really have needed the money, but it sounded more like an issue with a loan shark rather than a bank. He's a piece of work and thoroughly horrible. I don't think he's sincere in wanting to make up with Hayley at all.
Yeah, because... we've had experiences with credit cards in the past when we got married and we had to put a few things on there, and I don't remember the bank ever coming to our house and saying, oh, I need $5,000 by tomorrow.
No. Yeah, it was only $5,000, wasn't it?
Oh, it's only five.
I know.
We make that in a week.
I mean,
that's how much we earn per podcast.
It's not like hundreds of thousands that he's accrued or on his credit card.
But don't,
we never even considered the idea that it was a loan shark last week, but... could well be. Do we get to see the return of old Loan Shark and then give something else for Tina to moan about?
£5,000 is a lot of money if you... Michael.
Yeah, I know it is.
Just saying. You
no, I'm saying for a bank it's not a load of money.
Okay,
so banks aren't going to be knocking on people's door for £5,000.
It just came across like you think that £5,000's nothing.
No, I'd love to have £5,000.
We're not rich, everybody.
I'm surprised that Hayley isn't having any of ill effects from the chemo, which is what we said as well. I do think they're dressing her in clothes just a little bit too big to make sure she's...
Make it look like she's lost some weight.
I was interested by that remark. I haven't... And then we didn't get to see Hayley at all this week, so I'm going to have to look out for that. They really do need to start making her look ill, especially if they're going to kill her off early-ish next year.
The other side of that is also that some people just don't...
Some people don't.
Some people, and also the chemo, yeah, the chemo's bad. And with some people, it's the chemo. I don't know anything about Hayley's particular form of cancer, but some people prefer not to have chemo because that's the part that makes them ill, and the actual cancer, it doesn't actually, until the very last stages. And I know when my nan had cancer, she declined so fast. It's like one minute she's normal, and the next minute she was gone. And maybe that's what they're going to do.
Yeah, maybe.
Like a couple of weeks, she'll just be gone.
To be honest, I wouldn't really want it to drag out longer than that, because it's going to be pretty sad.
They're not going to be able to portray at all, and I mean, I'm glad in a way that the devastating appearance of somebody.
They did a pretty good job with Alma.
No.
Well, I don't.
Not when you've seen someone.
Okay then. Tivor thinks that the Shelley and Charlie abuse storyline was very realistic and well told, and then she finishes off talking, reconfirming what she said about Peter and Tina, because
because I think she's on the defensive here. Sorry, Tivor, because we were slagging off the idea that Tina and Peter could be a couple, and she said that she felt perhaps there were certain aspects that were admirable about Peter's appearance, and maybe perhaps. We don't appreciate that. I know you can't really, can you?
No.
But she's explaining herself and saying, I just understand why it happened. After this week, it almost seemed like Tina was taking a very immature stance on it, wearing her heart on her sleeve and chasing after Peter.
Yeah, so she understands where Peter, it comes from. But
we know Peter's got a track record, and so he probably couldn't really resist a woman throwing herself at him.
Yeah.
Especially when Carla's nagging in his ear.
Yeah.
That's why I never nag you, darling.
Thanks. Right, and we had a Facebook and Twitter question of the week this week, which was inspired by Dennis Tanner's return to the music biz. We wanted to know what your favourite Corey musical moments are.
Tivor says, my favourite was Deirdre, Janice, Hayley, I think, and Linda Baldwin doing ABBA on the Millennium Night. Blanche with a headpiece full of fruit commented to Ken, Deirdre, what does she look like?
Good moment. Karen has said, any time that Rita sings, and also never forget Sam doing his snake striptease routine at the Rovers. Gemma's given me odd looks here because I think Sam was probably before your time.
Well, I've obviously forgotten.
Oh, Sam would... Sam was another one that Sam? He was a stripper. There was a Coronation Street character. He was the hunk of the week
or the year, or whatever. Why haven't we done a character profile?
Because I think Karen has basically just summed him up in that one sentence.
Karen, whenever you want to do a character profile, just send in a clip.
She also says she loves how the music played in the background in Corrie often corresponds to the scene. Yeah. I never noticed that because I don't know very many songs. I never know what they're singing about.
they sang Two Become One in the background while Chesney and Sinead were snuggling.
I'd noticed that.
Nick, you'd notice.
I know that they are good at that because it gets pointed out on Coronation Street blog sometimes.
David said, I used to love a good sing-along in the Rovers back in the old days. I've seen this isn't David Platt thing.
No, this is David Lloyd.
They just don't do that anymore.
No, they haven't got the piano anymore, have they? Although, to be fair, they've got the jukebox and they do sometimes have a bit of a sing-song because it was only a few weeks ago that, wasn't it, Deirdre and Eileen and some of the others were having a bit of a karaoke around the jukebox.
It's not really the sort of thing they could do without it looking weird, like to have
it. It looked very twee.
Yeah, I mean, it looked twee at the time, but it was just part of what people used to do in pubs.
Yeah, it doesn't happen anymore.
I mean, when they do karaoke, I don't like it.
Don't you?
No. I always think, here we go. You want to be a pop star, so you're trying to get an agent.
Not necessarily. It depends who does it. To be fair, I don't think that Anne Kirkbride and Sue Cleaver are after a pop career.
Really? Look, if I was her and somebody said to me, look, we thought that was funny, we'll give you $10,000 to do a comedy single for Christmas, I would take it.
Emma suggested that Gail singing Katy Perry's Firework while hoovering has to be up there as a top musical moment. And the Corrie blog agreed with Karen that any time Rita sings is always a classic moment. I do quite like Rita singing sometimes. Depends how it fits the mood.
I think it does suit her character too as well, because every time she does it's like show off. But it's, of course she is a show-off. That's why she's still got red hair. however old she is.
I just like that it's a bit of a throwback to the very distant Coronation Street past of Rita's singing days.
They do need to maintain this sort of theatrical origins of Coronation Street.
I wonder whether she'll be inspired next Friday to sing in this concert and she'll realise that she's, oh, I've just been a grumpy Scrooge all this and it's Christmas after all, okay, I'll do a sing then.
I'm sure she's going to get up there and sing. They can't have a storyline with her involved.
Not singing, yeah. I hope she does. Well, I was thinking about some good Coronation Street musical moments and there's been loads. There's been like Status Quo at the wedding was kind of funny, although it was a bit weird having the actual quo there. Other Coronation Street musical moments that I've enjoyed have had it as like a bit of background. For example, I really did like Jack's death and when Vera came back and they played that that song that Bill Tarmy had sung and it was all swelling up when him and Ghost Vera having the dance, it was panning up through the house. I thought that was a really good use of music in Coronation Street. What have you enjoyed?
My favourite musical moment was when they played the You and Me song in the car. What's his name?
Richard Hillman.
Richard Hillman was trying to kill the Platt family. And every time I hear that song now, I always think of people careering to their death. Yeah,
I don't think any death. Coronation Street fans can hear that song without imagining that now.
And it always makes me laugh.
I wonder what the band think of that. They probably love
and
it.
They probably.
What else have there been? We're glad that nobody mentioned the Bohemian Rhapsody moment from last year because we didn't particularly like that. That was just a bit silly. Other Coronation Street musical moments.
Sadly, it's probably put them off of doing something similar.
Well, I think a lot of people did enjoy that. I just think we didn't. We were a bit grumpy about that one. What else has there been? I had some other things in mind.
Oh no, you told me another thing as well, but again, I was asleep.
Yeah.
So I wasn't listening.
I can't remember. But if anyone else has got any other favourite uses of music in Coronation Street that they'd like to share with us, do let us know. And it can either be like background music that fitted the scene really well, or somebody having a good old sing-song in the Rovers or wherever. Let us know what you've enjoyed.
There have been a few times, and I cannot think of them at all now, when they've played music as the show. It's music.
Very, very rarely.
And every time they do it, I cringe.
Yeah, they first did it when this is before you started watching it, when Sarah Louise was trapped by an internet stalker and he invited her over to her house and then she was hiding under the bed and then eventually the police came and got her out and they played some Placebo song, I think. And it was weird because British soaps just don't do that. No. Well, I think Hollyoaks probably does. It's more of an Australian American soap kind of thing. Yeah, I don't really like that. But just having it as if it's coming out of the jukebox in a bit of a background, that's okay.
And of course, the theme tune to Coronation Street always sets the tone for the show, doesn't it? Sometimes a bit mournful, sometimes you can imagine it's slightly triumphant. And the only thing I would say where EastEnders has the edge on Corrie, and I know people are going to hate me for saying this, but the outro music to EastEnders is so dramatic and awesome.
Dum-dums.
When somebody drops a bombshell and they just go, do, you can't beat that. They need to do something like that for Corrie because it's awesome. Because at the moment it's like, it's your baby.
Yeah, I don't know how they could work that in, I think. Yeah, so that is Coronation Street music, and that is the end of the show. So probably our theme music will be playing round about now, which means it's time to sign off, give our email address.
Our theme music is obviously the best use of music.
Yeah.
On a podcast.
Especially when it's the Christmas version.
Yes.
So you can email us at conversationstreet@gmail.com. Leave us a comment on the blog at conversationstreet.podbean.com. Don't forget to go there to vote in our Conversation Street Awards. Leave us a review on iTunes. You can like us on Twitter and be all up to date
with
our tweety things. Follow us on Twitter. Like us on Facebook.
You're so technologically advanced. And no, we're not on Instagram.
No. Although we sometimes post pictures on Twitter, like we did this week, a funny picture, yeah. I thought. Right, so next week, see you then. Have a good week. Nearly Christmas.
Hope you got your shopping done.
Bye-bye. The music for this podcast was provided by podcastthemes.com.